Welcome to the John, Paul, and Mike Show. I'm your co-host, Paul Holmes. And with me today is your other co-host, John Jurisic. Yeah.
And, of course, we have Mike stumbling in and out of the room somewhere.
Yeah, he's...
He's very problematic.
I think he might have been drinking last night. I'm not 100% sure.
Was that at the Strathcona Hotel that hosted that amazing...
social
media party?
Again. Yeah, maybe. So, but he's come back. We're speaking into him right now.
That's gonna be great.
And
hi, Mike.
and you're listening to a broadcast today from the social media camp,
world renowned social media camp. I'd like to add.
I believe it is the greatest social media event north of Texas.
Really? What's going on south of Texas?
We're gonna talk about that another time. So we're really excited because we're here, and it's a fantastically fun time with John and lots of other folks, and we have some really cool interviews coming up.
We sure do. Well, first of all, you know, you're a founder and organizer, so like you're into the minutia of this thing. I have the luxury of actually coming to see it as an outsider, and this is a phenomenal event. I don't think you have a sense really of what you've created. What a great
An animal.
it's a fabulous event for Victoria. It helps our tourism, it helps the industry, it helps business. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Chris. And if I'm going to put you on the spot, I'm going to do it now. Twitter feeds for our show and Facebook page.
Well, the at John, Paul, and Mike is where you'll find
you and I.
And
but no pictures.
Yeah, and Facebook / John, Paul, and Mike. And here at Social Media Camp, we've got hashtag SM Camp. Although there's a few others. The usedeverywhere.com people are here, and they are using a hashtag used party, which is a lot of fun because they're throwing a party here at Social Media Camp. So lots of neat photos. And something really cool, Mandy Farmer has recently launched the Zed Hotel, and they brought their bus here, which is actually a converted Volkswagen van.
Yeah.
And people are getting their photos taken with it as hashtag Zed Bus, which
really
is
cool, fun, innovative.
So neat.
Ideas coming out of that Accidents Group, which is where this hotel is.
Exactly.
It's within their umbrella.
Yeah.
And we also have a Twitter handle for our very the third part of our group, which is our little Mike here.
Yeah. It's at a lonely Mike, MIC. And he doesn't really say. Do you have anything to say about that, Mike? No, I guess not.
Well, he did. It was very profound.
Silence can be that way.
We definitely look forward to huge interaction. Our
yeah.
goal with this is to literally talk a lot about nothing a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And we certainly hope that you will interact with us via the social media handles.
Yeah, and thanks for listening. I hope you enjoy the show.
All right, we're sitting here now with the keynote speaker from Social Media Camp, Todd Maffin. Todd, welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, this is kind of cool because we're starting this new podcast, John, and how good are we at this technology, this podcast technology?
We're really bad.
We're really bad, yeah.
Until about a minute or two ago when Todd told us essentially how to do this
properly, yeah.
And as somewhat of a no, although I use social media, I'm not as engaged as you are and nor as Todd is, but certainly I've been walking around Social Media Camp and all they've been talking about is this man.
You can say nerd. I won't be offended.
So I won't say that. So I am thrilled to have him and to have him and chat with him.
Well, you know, the third part of our group, of John, Paul, and Mike, has not been really helpful. Mike has not been really helpful in terms of helping us.
Yes.
So we needed a little hand getting Mike up.
Tuned up, yes.
Okay, so why don't you tell me what does Todd do?
So Todd,
why is he your keynote, and why is this man so loved in this camp today?
So Todd is, you know, just everybody in social media knows this guy. He is actually a nerd.
Like he's proud of it.
Oh, I wear it like the badge of honor it is.
And he knows everything about this stuff. You know, we were talking yesterday, Todd, and, you know, there's so many great specialists. But you have, you know, conquered the whole social media world. You're on top of, you know, all the high-level stuff that's going on. And that's got to be hard. How do you keep on top of all this? You know, Facebook's changing, Twitter changes their user interface, all this stuff's constant. Google Plus is who knows what's going on with them. How do you keep on top of all
this? I don't think it's hard for nerds. I really don't. Like, I think if you're like,
You likely enjoy it, right?
I do. Like, I'm like genuinely fascinated by the technology, and new stuff will come out, and I want to figure out how it works. And so, but I do that in my off time, you know, because it's fun for me. Yeah. So I'll, you know, reverse engineer something, or I'll look at the API or the code, or I'll look at the HTML page, or not the HTML, but the, you know, the source code of these web pages, just to kind of see how it works. So I'm sort of, I don't know, compelled to do it because of my nerd.
So Todd does what? Are you a social media consultant?
Todd is the president. Yes. He's the president of EngageQ.
Okay.
EngageQ is digital strategy. Am I correct?
Yeah, we do. We like to say we turn likes into love affairs.
There you go.
So we build. We specialize in contagious engagement. So we help brands, usually medium to large size organizations, like CBC. We work with a number of shopping centers. OK Tire is a client of ours. Abbott Pharmaceutical. We help them with their social media. So we often it starts with a digital audit. So we'll take a look at their social engagement.
Gotcha.
What are they doing right? What are they doing wrong? What's the best type of post?
Yeah.
You know, who are the influencers? Because a lot of people, when they do social media strategy, they forget to reach out to the key influencers. And it's hard to surface those to figure out who they are. So we run through. And it's not, you know, there's no, like, magic tool to do it. It's like hard work. You sit there, you look at someone's Twitter page. And so we do all that legwork for the brands and present them with a fairly actionable
report.
Where
are you physically located?
Vancouver and Toronto.
Oh, all right. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. So you got a bit of West and East in you.
Yes, exactly.
Oh,
yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. And tell us a little bit, you know, the 1 minute synopsis of your keynote, Deconstructing Viral.
Yeah, so one of the things that many of our clients ask us, and I'm sure everyone who's in the industry wants to do this, which is how do I get something go viral? It doesn't have to be a viral video. It could be a Facebook post or a tweet. How do I make it go viral? How do I get it to go everywhere? So to undertake this research, we believe in you know, evidence-based research for this stuff. We're not just sort of based on, you know, someone has an interesting anecdote, so that must be fact. So we spent about 18 months reverse engineering 50 of the world's most successful viral marketing campaigns to try to figure out. And again, that's sort of the nerd stuff in me, right? Like, I used to do that for video games to get the copy protection out of them when I was a teenager. So so we would reverse engineer these campaigns to figure out what are the elements, or, well, if there are any elements that are common to all of them. And we didn't know when we started out whether there would be, right?
Right.
We thought maybe they're all flukes. But as it turns out, the more we got into it, right when we hit about 25 or 30, we realized there are six things that are common to all of these campaigns. And we kept doing all through the 50, and there were like two or three exceptions, but almost all of them had these six factors that we call genetic markers. That if you program those six into your campaign, the chance of that campaign, video, tweet, whatever, going viral increases dramatically.
So Paul and I were very much hoping to reach 12 listeners.
Wow. Well, I don't know if I can help you with double digits.
And so for the 12...
I thought we were shooting for 13.
Maybe for the 13th, are you going to tell us what those six...
Sure. You want to do it? You want to apply it to your podcast? Absolutely.
Let's see if we can pull this off.
All right. So the first factor is what we call ACC matching. The ACC stands for Audience, Creative, and Call to Action, or sometimes content instead of creative. But it basically means that your target audience, so the people who this podcast is aimed at, you have to match that to the creative. So in other words, you have to match the type of audio with the type of person that they are. So if they are busy executives, your podcast had better be short and punchy.
Right.
If they are, you know, knitters in their 60s, it can be lighter. It can be conversational. Mm-hmm. On a viral marketing side, you know, it can be something like, you know, if you're trying to reach senior executives and you're using a rap video, your ACC matching is off. It's not going to go viral, right? Mm-hmm. The third letter in there, so that's audience and creative.
Which, by the way, I do fairly often rap videos. So
excellent.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Oh, great. Okay.
None have gone viral, though, so.
See what happens when you lose tattoo bets?
Clearly, I haven't been doing my ACC matching.
Exactly.
And then the third is call to action, so which is less so important for a podcast, but on the corporate side, are the people who we're targeting likely to take the action we want them to?
Mm.
So that's ACC matching. If those three components don't match each other, your chance of going viral is not.
So far, that sounds a little bit like what regular marketing is supposed to be doing.
Of course.
Over time.
Of course.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course, yeah.
Because sometimes you feel like there's a disconnect, but in fact, the social media is a tool to apply pretty much standard business practices. Anyway, that's number
absolutely.
One.
So cool. Yeah, and it's all, I mean, it's all strategy. It's all sort of basic strategy. I mean, one of the things with the booth here for EngageQ, we've got lots of people coming up, luckily, and say, how do we do this? And I say, well, what's your objective? And they'll say, well, our objective is to share stories. I'm like, that's not an objective, that's a tactic. What's your objective? And they'll say, well, it's to get more brand awareness. That's not an objective, that's a that's a strategy.
Yes.
Like, what does telling stories and what does, and what does brand awareness get you? And finally, you know, this person I was just talking to this morning said, well, we frankly, and she was a little embarrassed by it.
Yeah.
She said, well, we want more email subscribers on our mailing list. I'm like, that's an objective we can
perfect.
Work with, right? So.
Yeah, and it's funny too, you mentioned that, cause I, you know, I've been around the marketing world a fair bit. And it's interesting how often people clearly don't know what their objectives are. My wife does, you know, community management, and just finding people to nail down, like, what's the objective? Because you can't be a community manager if you don't know what the objective is, right?
Right.
Like, what are you trying to achieve here?
And we sit down, and one of the things we do with when we onboard clients is we sit down with them and pull out of them what their core objectives are. And we don't want to just know their social objectives, which are obvious, you know, more Twitter followers,
strong,
but we want to know their business objectives. Like, how much more foot traffic in your mall do you want within 12 months? And we track it every month with them to see if we're on target.
Well, it's brilliant. And I like, there is a trend and a theme that's coming out of our conversations from folks here at Social Media Camp.
Yeah.
That being, how is social media starting to apply for business? How can they use it to increase their ROI?
Yeah.
And that seems to be the next place.
Mm-hmm.
I encouraged Paul and perhaps Chris to think next year about business media.
Yeah.
Social media, business media.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's point number one. What about number two?
Yeah, let's do this a little differently, John. We're going to ask him for two more, and then we're going to ask him to tell us where people can find.
Good idea. I like
good
it.
Good idea. Yeah.
I like
you
it.
You are a marketing guy.
Exactly.
Call to action, then.
Okay.
And the numbers 4, 5, and 6 are the most critical, so we'll just tell 1, 2, and 3.
Oh, okay. Perfect.
So number 1 is ACC matching. Number 2 is a simple concept or a single concept. And, you know, one of the things that we saw viral marketing campaigns fail is if it was too complicated.
Right.
So, you know, they had 3-act structures. They tried to develop characters. They tried to tell too complicated a story.
Mm-hmm.
Not good, right? You want one. Think about something like Double Rainbow or Dollar Shave Club, these viral videos that went huge.
Right.
They went huge because it was one thing they were showing. You know, it was very basic. Or the Nike Golden Shoes campaign. It's a guy kicking a ball. There's very little to it.
Yeah.
So don't overthink it. The third element is sentiment, right? So, of the sentiment factors, which is the tone or the emotion that you pull out, we found that really there are only 3 tones that worked inside viral marketing. And they all start with S's. One is silly. Obviously, we see lots of those. Dollar Shave Club, you know, Double Rainbow are kind of silly. Serious. So advocacy-based campaigns like Dove, you know, suicide, things like that.
Yeah.
And stunning, which is a bit more nebulous, but it's something which is just like visually incredible to see. You know, the guys that were jumping backwards into pants, you know, is stunning.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That kind of thing. So,
what about funny?
Silly.
Silly.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry, did you say that?
Yeah. Silly, serious, or stunning.
So, oh, okay. See, this, I didn't realize we were going with theme.
Yes.
Yeah.
The 3.
Well,
and then the other 4, and all together, if you actually, so first is ACC matching, so that starts with A.
Yeah.
The second one is a simple concept, that starts with S. The third concept is sentiment, that starts with S. So we've got ASS so far.
Yes.
And then the other 3 ones start with R, E, and D. And I wanted to make it say assured. I was hoping that it would spell it, but it was no 7th factor, and there was nothing that started with U, so it just comes out ASRED. So if people want to download the slides, they can just go to ASRED.com.
Oh, fantastic.
And the slides are there.
Who gave you the idea of registering that?
Someone here at Social Media Camp tweeted to me, and they said, you know, ASRED.com is available, and I'm like, I am so buying that.
That's clever. All right. Assured, I assume, was not available and didn't work anyway.
I actually own Assured ROI anyway.
Oh,
so I was hoping that it would fit, but it doesn't.
Yeah. So that's fantastic. We,
We encourage you listeners to go. I want to talk about a couple of viral campaigns, though. John, you know, what's your favorite viral campaign that you've seen?
Oh, I love Old Spice.
Old Spice thing was
fantastic because I'm actually of an age,
yeah.
Although none of us can see that, in which Old Spice was actually a relevant
thing. Oh, wow.
We all used Old Spice.
Wow.
And so I love the campaign because it kind of brought young people to this old person's cologne.
Yeah.
Yeah, very, very, very effective for me.
Yeah. And do you know, like, that particular campaign was deemed to be effective because we all saw it. Did it boost the bottom line?
I wouldn't have called that a viral campaign until they started delivering successive rounds, until they started putting out some additional stuff, right?
Yeah,
the Old Spice guy started shooting videos and tweeting to specific people. That's truly when it went viral.
Right.
Don't confuse virality with enormous media spend.
Yeah.
Old Spice became very popular because they bought an enormous amount of media. Now, obviously, they were very funny. They went onto YouTube as well, and it got spread around that way.
Yeah.
But it wasn't truly until they started delivering these additional rounds, excessive rounds.
Yes.
That's interesting, yeah.
Okay, well, then a second one would be the whole Jimmy Fallon stuff.
Yeah.
I mean,
that
stuff is just crazy.
It's insane, yeah.
I mean, that Emma Stone lip sync.
Yeah.
I think it's about 10 million views.
But think about how it fits, right? And there's a good example, right? Think about how it fits into this model, right? ACC matching is perfectly aligned. So they've got the right audience. They've got the audience is young, and they use a lot of digital media. So that's the audience. The creative is short, it's punchy, it's easy to spread, you know, those sorts of things. And it matches the sort of tone, you know? Like slow news jam.
Was he the one who did the
history of hip hop?
Him and
the news. He took the news anchor and edited all the clips together.
Oh yeah, Brian. He does Brian Williams.
Brian Williams.
Oh my God, you've got to play that in this podcast. It's Brian Williams. They've got like 10 of them, and the best one.
We'll link to it in the notes. Yeah.
No. Play it at the end. And the best one is he does. I think he does "I Wish" by Ski-Lo.
Oh, okay.
Oh, and there was one with Timberlake where they were just the whole conversation was about Twitter.
I remember that. Oh. Yeah. Hashtag, yeah.
And so, yeah. so, and about six videos are coming out of every show. Yeah. It's remarkable.
Oh, it's huge. Yeah, he's on the most worldwide every day, right? I wanted to tell you my favorite. And see if you remember this one. It's dating myself here. This is at least 4 or 5 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Swagger Wagon. Remember that one?
No, I don't.
Yeah,
neither do I.
So it was Toyota.
What is going on with
Toyota selling the Sienna minivan, and they got a middle-aged couple to do a rap all about cruising down the cul-de-sac in their minivan.
Wow.
And they call it the Swagger Wagon, and they had the kids. Phenomenally funny to me. Right? Because, and this is again, I think, ACC, their target audience was people in their mid-30s, you know, with kids, and we grew up with this rap, right?
Yeah.
You know, but now we kind of make fun of it, and so it just worked brilliantly, right?
Yeah.
They had a whole series around it, you know, they had this, family and all of these, well, I don't know if they sold more minivans, but I bought a minivan, but I didn't buy their brand.
That leads to my question now, and sort of just a comment around are we getting to a place where business en masse sort of is starting to say, how do we use social media to increase our bottom line? How does it impact our return on investment? How are we moving from simply a novelty, something that people use on all their gadgets, to actually a business utility?
Yeah,
how are you finding that?
We're getting there. The problem is that the platforms are changing. So this isn't like traditional business strategy where it simply doesn't change. You know, like good sales best practices never really change. Contact them frequently and things like that. So so we build up a body of knowledge in business based on best practices. The problem with social media and why it's difficult, I think, anyway, for a lot of organizations to get involved in it, is that the platforms, the best practices change, evolve every week. You know, I mean, Facebook changes their platform.
Yeah.
You know, the most recent thing is we're recording this now in May of 2014 is Facebook has started slashing, like just annihilating organic reach. So the number of people who are seeing your posts, if you have a brand page, it used to be quite low as well. It used to be like 16%. Of the people who've already said they like your page and want to see content from you, only 16% on average would see your content. Facebook has now said they're going to be dropping that to 2 to 3%. So if you've got 1,000, if you've spent all your money building up 1,000 likes on your brand page, 20 or 30 people will see your content on the newsfeed.
And so is Facebook doing that to push them into paid advertising?
Facebook's doing that for two reasons. That's one of them, is to push people into paid, because they're saying if you want to get past this 2 or 3%, hey, we'll show it to everyone, but you got to give us a lot of money.
Right.
The other reason is there's a bit of altruism to it, and what they say is there's some truth to it. Unlike Twitter, where Twitter is one massive stream of every tweet from everyone you followed. Right, so you can never keep up. So if you follow 200 or 300 accounts, you're going to get used. There's no filtering there, right? Mm-hmm. So you see the completely irrelevant tweets with the really important life tweets.
Yes.
So Facebook has taken the opposite tack, and they filter things out, right? So they say, we're going to show you content from people and brands that you already engage with a lot. On average, Facebook says that between your logins, most people have an average of about 1,500 status updates that could qualify for them. From friends, yeah, I know, from friends that they are friends with, from brands, from ads, and so on. So there's no way we could do 1,500. So they streamline it down to 50 or 60 in your newsfeed, and they call that edge rank. But even edge rank is a moving target. So it's difficult for businesses, you know.
Anytime you create an algorithm, people game it, right? I mean, the whole SEO industry was built around that premise.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah.
Absolutely.
So obviously you're one of the nation's leaders in this area. So how are you?
Hey, let's not hold back. One of North America's leaders.
let's just call him a global leader.
Mexico, for God's sake.
So then, how do you interact with your clients in measuring that ROI and telling them, look, this is how you do it? And are they listening?
Well, part of it is we stay on top of it for them.
Okay.
There's no reason a marketing director at a large company needs to spend their time measuring Facebook edge rank on a daily basis. Let us do that for you. You know, we'll tell you how to get your content out there, but we'll handle the mechanics. You know, if your car breaks down, you take it to a mechanic who studies, who lives their life inside nuts and bolts and lug nuts and all sorts of things like that. You don't want to do it yourself.
Yeah.
So,
good analogy.
The short answer is we spend our days always analyzing that.
Okay.
And we're fortunate. We've built up contacts inside Facebook now, which not a lot of firms have. So we can pick up the phone and ask, you know, what's coming down the pipe. They never tell us that, but, you know, sort of how things are changing.
I'm sure you have relationships with the folks that are, okay. And are you finding an older demographic of CEOs and executives embracing media, social media into their marketing campaigns?
I think we're still in the phase where, especially for, and forgive the demographic, but older CEOs especially, still treat social media as the kind of the little play money bag, you know, that they've got. You know, they've got 3% of their marketing budget.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, we used to call it go money. It's play money. It's like if something happens with it, great. So a lot of large organizations are still in that space. But some of them that rely on consumer engagement, you know, or are the target of a lot of consumer reviews, like airline companies and things like that, restaurants as well, are embracing it wholeheartedly.
That is great to hear.
Yeah.
So we're going to have Social Media Camp for the next 20 years.
Fantastic. You know, it's a I just want a little plug for Todd, and Todd's regular website is toddmaffin.com. And, you know, it's a it's been a real pleasure to have you here. I know the feedback we've heard in the hallway. I told you this yesterday. We've had people who've been to the show every year, and they've been they came up and said that Todd's the best keynote that we've had ever.
Oh, well, wow.
That's what I've heard.
Right? Yeah. So, and you got to remember.
It helps that you feed people alcohol before
the keynote.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, you got to remember, like, we've had some really great keynotes, and I don't want to belittle them because they're fantastic speakers. We've had Mari Smith, Chris Brogan, you know, real leaders. And so I was, when that, you know, to be honest, I was a little surprised when people came up and said
that. And what's great is to hear that he's a Canadian guy.
Exactly.
So that's fantastic.
Yeah. Represent.
And clearly now his price is going to go up like about 3 times. So this will be the last time we hear from Todd.
So we may not be back on the John Paul and Mike show. Tell us, though, in your experience, what's the coolest social media conference north of Texas?
Yeah, seriously, you guys are in it. Well, I don't know if you're fishing for that, but yeah, no.
I was 100%
fishing. 100% fishing. Because someone said that, and I go, well, what's south of Texas?
We don't talk about that, right? Right.
And I mean, you know, I've come to this for the last couple of years just as an attendee. I haven't even been speaking. And I mean, I get great value out of it. We do, you know, I mean, and EngageQ, we're a sponsor now this year because there's so much, there's really well connected people that we're contacting with. So, I mean, the value we've gotten out of the sponsorship by itself has been phenomenal.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
And, you know, that is not true. Dude,
we built that booth just for this. You know, big stretchy, we got this huge orange kind of thing. It got delivered to my apartment the day before I left.
Well, and you know, one of the things, Todd wasn't involved in the internal conversations, but this is the first time a keynote speaker has ever become a sponsor. And he became a sponsor after we hired him to do the keynote. And the reason, of course, that's important is because we don't want people to think that people are buying the keynote spot, right? And so we had this sort of internal discussion of like, you know, is this kosher? Is this ethical sort of thing? And we're like, well, yeah, I mean, this is his business.
Well, I'm glad you said yes.
Well, and exactly. And because, you know, I mean, he's been to the conference, he knows what it's like, you know, and he recognizes that there's value for companies to represent here. So, we certainly appreciate everything that you've done. Not on behalf of John and I, but on behalf of Chris and I, with Social Media Camp, it's been just an absolute pleasure.
You know, there's nothing else like it, truly. There really isn't. I mean, you know, Toronto has Mesh, Vancouver had F5. These are cities that you would think would have, it would be swamped with social media stuff, and the ones that exist don't do it very well. And what I love about Social Media Camp every year is it's such a wide variety of expertise levels for people, right? I mean, there are people here who know, there was someone in one of the sessions who put up her hand kind of meekly and said, I don't know what a hashtag is.
Right.
You know, and then there are other people that all they want to talk about is JSON programming for API development.
The whole spectrum.
Fantastic. You know?
It's
great.
Well, I'm very honored to have met you. Fantastic, innovative information.
Yeah.
And we're going to think about putting that Jimmy Fallon piece at the end. You sure the Jimmy Fallon police aren't going to come after us?
I'm not sure.
I can tell you the question. It's would it cover under fair dealing in Canadian law? Because we're talking about it. We're not using it promotionally. So we can use a clip of it, and we can probably fall under fair dealing.
This guy is a mountain of information.
Yeah. However, if in fact John Paul and Mike become Paul and Mike, we'll know why.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tom.
Yeah, anytime, guys.
We're sitting down now. Oh, sorry, I'm not on NPR anymore. We're sitting down today. So very excited to have my very good friend, Terry Rakowalski, who is a certified management consultant with Front Porch Perspectives here in Victoria. And, we were joking around before the show that, I don't really know what the word consultant means because, and then remembered that my title at Investors Group is consultant. so it's become kind of a throwaway word, and you know, there's beauty consultants and
social media consultants
and management consultants. So we're hoping that Terry can help clear us up on what this mystery word means, and more importantly, what a management consultant does. Terry.
Well, management consultant, first of all, I'm a certified management consultant, so I actually had to go to school, and there's a peer-reviewed body that we are accountable to. So I went out and got an MBA, so I'm a generalist first in business, and then I went and got my CMC, certified management consultant, which is through the Canadian Association of Management Consultants. What we do is we go into business, and we're basically business diagnosticians. So we take a look at five elements of business. We look at root causes and then come up with findings and recommendations. Ultimately, what I do that's different is I don't want to just write the report. I want to help you implement it. I want to get my hands in there and get things moving forward. It's an action planning.
Okay. Well, that's helpful. So tell me three things that most businesses are doing wrong.
Well, one, I think, is not reviewing their strategic plan when things are changing in their environment. So if you do a SWOT, a strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats, you're looking for things that were your gaps, where you want to go, but there's not a gap there. So that's one of the main things that they fail to do. The other one is to dive into your financials. Mm-hmm. What's working, what's not working, because there's only two sides of the equation, revenue and expenses. And then that forward-looking part, and part of the forward-looking part is, of course, social media. A lot of companies, and the companies I work with are technology companies or more software companies, more staid engineering, fundamental manufacturing, and social media scares them.
So, Terry, you and I have worked together quite a bit and have seen so many of the struggles and challenges that companies have faced. A lot of them don't even know they're facing it. Certainly, people say to me, what's a post-08 economy? Well, one could basically capture it in one line, which is most folks have to do more with less. To do more with less means you have to be more efficient, you have to be more productive. A whole ton of people don't know how to do that. That's where your business can really help. We're here at Social Media Camp, so it's all about Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn, etc. Talk to us a little bit about just that angle. How could that, and where is that helping businesses get more efficient, more productive, and do more with less?
Well, that's a really good point. So one of the things that we talk about in productivity is, like, there's actually rules of what productivity is, value added per employee. But if you can use these tools to get more productive, let's give an example. Say I track my product through supply chain with radio frequency, or I'm tracking my trucks with GPS. You can get real-time updates about where there's trouble on the highways so that I can get my products through. Now, this sounds like a bit of pie in the sky, but I'm telling you, it works. And it's happening in Europe far more often than it does in North America. So you're linking your supply chain to your social media chains. And it's very often also used in emergency services. If you have an earthquake, you want to know where people are. Where do you go first? Twitter.
I think it's fascinating to see how businesses using social media, because it actually isn't what most people think is what social media is. We're using online platforms and networks to become more efficient and more productive. Not just to chat with each other, not just to reflect experiences, but to actually put business processes into play. And I think we're really at the front end of that.
Yes.
The front end of that. And I've often been challenged, well, what is the next new social media platform? What's it going to be? It likely isn't another Facebook or another Twitter or another. It is likely businesses adopting social media into their operational processes.
Yeah. Exactly.
And so I'm just so excited. As a Canadian business community, we are sadly lacking in terms of efficiency and productivity. Where we used to be leaders,
yeah.
Yet it does appear that we're one of we're one of the global leaders in social media adoption. Mm-hmm. Is that correct, Paul?
That's a double-edged prong, though, because while you're correct that the percentage of Canadians that are using social media is actually slightly higher than the U.S., for example. What isn't happening is the brands and the companies and the businesses are not doing the stuff that Terry's talking about. And, certainly on any scale that we see in Europe and in America, right?
So why do you think, Paul?
John, you've ran businesses. I've ran businesses, right? The reality is, there's two commodities that a business owner has, right? One is money and the other is time. And so they either don't have enough time or they don't have enough money or they haven't allocated enough money to hire somebody like Terry who can help them prioritize these
things. Well, Terry's going to help us, but I think a third is lack of awareness.
Understanding that operations is changing. I spoke at the AGM for the Fraser Valley Apex in the fall, which is a group that does supply chain and management productivity worldwide. And that's what we talked about, is how can you use social media in operations and how we're changing things in the evolution. I do believe there's a role for government in there, as well as business groups, to sit down and say, well, how can we do this and how can we support business? Because, as you say, Paul, the average business has his head down. He's mm-hmm. busy doing this.
Yeah.
So how can we provide him the tools and just the knowledge to go, yeah, I've seen somebody else, seen a case study, I've seen how it works, and how can I use it?
So, Terry, you're blowing my mind here. Are you saying that social media is more
than just what you had for breakfast and your favorite kittens?
I am.
Okay. So in the actual operations of the company.
Yes.
There are applications for social media.
Yes. And so that's why I say, you know, when it comes to social media, it should not just be the marketing and PR people.
Yeah.
Because right now, if you look at it, it's marketing PR people and communications people who own social media.
Yeah.
I'm challenging operations people, finance people, and the strategists to get in and understand it more. The more you understand, the more you can apply. Do I need you to be tweeting each day? No, but I need you to understand the why behind it so that you can see the next thing coming.
Well, and that raises an interesting paradigm then, because I've heard this in reverse. What I've heard is that everybody, no matter what company you're in, from the mailroom to the CEO, everybody's a marketer. Everybody is in marketing now. So is that, are we talking about that only in reverse, where the operations, these marketing-esque tools are applicable now, are we talking about two different things when you hear that?
Well, they are applicable whether or not you use them on the same platform. So, for example, it might be an internal platform that's monitoring Twitter,
right,
that would then link into your truck routing or your machining routing, you know, that sort of thing. So that you're monitoring, in particularly if you're sourcing products from other parts of the world, you want to know what's happening.
Right.
Yeah. There's been internal application, and there have been applications of what we're talking about here locally, especially with regard to inventory management. It can happen right at the very front end with the salesman on the road interacting with some sort of media platform. I might suggest to you, Paul, that next year at Social Media Camp, you actually have a business media component. Because boy, oh boy, is that... Even more interestingly, a political media component.
Yeah.
It's moving beyond social. And I think that's where a lot of very exciting innovation is happening, and Terry's at the forefront of that for sure.
Fantastic. Well, we can't thank you enough, Terry, for coming on our show. You know, I'm a big personal fan of yours, and I think any time I've ever needed really good business advice, I've come to you. I don't think I've ever actually paid you. sorry about that.
And how about if we let's let Terry.
Yeah.
Announce her social media sort of
tags.
How do we find you? I'm at Consulting Mania.
Yeah.
I will talk to anybody on Twitter.
Yeah.
On Google+, T. Rakowalski and Front Porch Perspectives.
Okay.
Those are my primary platforms, and always at theconsultinglife.ca.
Awesome. And if you're a business out there and you've been ignoring these things, and you have some money to pay Terry, I would encourage you to do so because she's fantastic. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Welcome to the John, Paul, and Mike Show, transmitting directly from the Victoria Conference Center at Social Media Camp. Hello, Paul Holmes. How are you today?
I'm very good. John, you look very
fabulous,
enthusiastic,
handsome, intelligent.
Fabulous, yes.
Thank you. All those things.
Yeah.
Which, of course, we can only say on radio because no one can ever tell.
We're not on radio. We just have a podcast, John.
Oh, well, it's close enough. But we're lucky enough to have yet another amazing speaker.
Yes.
And this gentleman works locally. So there's a ton of talent locally. That being James Bogus, VP Operations and Development, Victoria Airport Authority.
Mm-hmm.
And so one would think initially, well, how does social media and developing in airports and all of those related activities, how are they put together?
Well, so, I'm pretty sure that the last time I had bad service at an airport, I tweeted about it. So I imagine that has something to do with it. But why don't we allow the man himself to answer that question?
Thank you, gentlemen. I can certainly validate you are a good-looking bunch, by the way.
Oh!
Podcast or otherwise. First of all, it was a great experience today speaking at the Social Media Camp. The airport is very focused on customer service, and a part of that is how we're learning now to use these tools and techniques to engage the passengers, and the meeters and greeters are come see those passengers. I will be very candid and say, up until about a year ago, we weren't in that space at all. And what I learned very quickly is not having a voice is sometimes worse than having a bad voice. So we learned how to have a proper voice in that space, and that's made a big impact for us.
So certainly integration of social media and allowing a customer to talk within a tourism-based environment, which fundamentally is what you guys do, always allows the complainers to have a voice, and sometimes they overwhelm the medium. So how do you manage that? There could be 1,000 people that come through our beautiful airport and don't say a thing, but there's that one person who doesn't like that their Tim Hortons coffee wasn't hot enough. How do you handle that, James?
You know, I think the big message for handling customer concerns is being transparent with all your customers. As you say, whether it's a coffee or – let me use an example. If you guys remember being Victorian residents here, back in October, we had a great deal of fog. And everybody blames the airport for Mother Nature's fog. But it certainly delayed a lot of flights. And those
it's awfully convenient.
It is. Well, you got to blame somebody. Got to blame somebody. And because we're listening and responding, that makes it a little bit easier. But just
I tell you, when I can't fit into my shirt, I blame the airport.
Very well. Yeah, welcome to the line. So, but no, but having a voice in a space which demands immediacy, whether it's Twitter, whether it's Facebook, the customers in the airport, as an example, that day were complaining. They were wanting information about what is going to happen. When am I going to be able to leave the airport? And although we have all the traditional tools, and I say traditional, I feel like a dinosaur, email, website, and we can put information on there, that's not in today's world relevant enough to keep our audience engaged. And what we were able to do is leverage those tools to communicate broadly, but not hide the fact that there were challenges, not hide the fact that there were flight delays due to the weather, but to give everybody the same information at the same time and just be upfront and honest about it. We know running a public facility, you're going to have some gives and some take. Sometimes a bathroom could be dirty, need some attention. Other times, someone might have a great meal at our new Spinnaker's restaurant and enjoy that. So based on having social media, we can broadcast information to a wide audience and at the same time, give them a personal attention they're asking for.
So I guess the pressing question then for me, James, is, what took you guys so long? You know, I mean, we've been tooting the horn at Social Media Camp, and we've been you know, I mean, the world has been moving forward, and it's not to complain. I mean, I'm glad that you kind of took the plunge, but like, what was the holdup?
Let me give a bit of context to help you out on that. Of course, the Victoria Airport Authority is hidden in within some of the best real estate in Lower Vancouver Island. And amongst the airport, near the airport, on airport land, are manufacturers, very large manufacturers exporting right across the world and doing upwards of, there's close to 20, 25 of them doing close to $1 billion worth of business. Most of them are not involved in social media. Interestingly enough, Paul, that's a question one could expand to beyond the airport. Why aren't some maybe they're very successful. Anyway, I'd love to hear your response, but it could be a more general question, in other words,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And, you know, to that end, it always impresses me, as you say, John, about the quantity of business and the quality of business that's done at the airport. And when we look at the Airport Authority, we have to recognize the business itself really came to fruition in 1997. It was really a government-run airport prior to that, as many airports in Canada were. One of the reasons why we took so long to get into this space was a lack of understanding the value in this new medium. And it wasn't new. A year ago, social media was already, everybody's doing it. It was just, we weren't doing it yet. And it was a lack of understanding about the time commitment, the expectation of immediacy. You know, if someone sends us a tweet at 8 o'clock at night on a Sunday, is someone going to respond? What information are we going to put forward? We just didn't have a plan. Now, fortunately, and it was thanks to people like Paul, for example, and also I give a lot of credit to Chris Burge from Bee West.
Yeah.
Fortunately, due to those relationships, and I even had Dan Gunn at Viatech tell me, James, email's dead. Start using social media. And I said, Dan, I got a phone and email. I'm fine. Thank you very much. But lesson learned. And what I learned through that process is there were customers engaging us today. We just weren't paying attention because we weren't in that space. And that was the real driver for us, is coming to that realization and realizing we got to get in the game because our customers are already demanding it of us. We were just behind the curve. It took some time to shift also, you know, management attention toward this clearly needed communication area.
Well, when we say everyone's using it, let's pre-qualify. Likely folks are using social media and have been for some time, but for business, a lot of them are just starting. It's certainly professionalizing. Social media is starting to be seen as a way to reach customers and to reach clients that businesses haven't seen before. And I would suggest to you that even though you, it might seem you're late to the game, you're not. You're bang on. You're literally, at the same time as so many other businesses. And therefore, kudos to your team. Are there any, since we are broadcasting live here, any potential horror stories of things, little snippets of things you might want to let out that are, I suppose at the end of the day, amusing. Maybe they weren't at the time.
Actually, I do. In fact, I shared it with the entire social media camp during my presentation earlier today. The reason why we entered the space, we had been considering it. We were certainly planning on getting there eventually. But like everything, you've got a lot of great ideas, but less time. So you always prioritize and implement. And again, let me point out, we've got a great communication program, lots of public engagement. We have a website with lots of information. We do emails back and forth, phone calls, community events, you name it. We just weren't in social media. So here's my story for you, John. The reason why we entered the space when we did, on the day we did, is there was someone out there. I call them trolls. That's the term I know. I'm sure there's a better term for the social media guys of, or ladies of today. But there was someone out there who thought they were the Victoria Airport. And they took the time in the Twitter space or Twitterverse, and see, I'm not even that well-versed in it yet. I'm working toward it, to pretend that they were the airport. And what was worse, John, is they already had a following of all of mainstream media in Victoria, Air Canada, WestJet, Horizon Air, United, and they were pretending to be us. And now let me tell you something. When I got a call from my boss, can't remember the exact day, but it was a Thursday, and it was the morning, about 10:30, telling me that we had one of our biggest airline customers calling us regarding alleged safety issues that we were tweeting about their airline when we weren't even in the space. Just imagine how I felt.
Ouch.
Yes. Ouch.
What a fascinating story. Was it somebody you can name?
I'd like to tell you that even if I did, it wouldn't matter. The world of the internet, and obviously it's always been this way with social media, is certainly one that can be very anonymous. And having the fact we just didn't have the voice was the lesson learned.
Right.
And I certainly will say that we were able to resolve that immediate issue and have that Twitter site shut down. But what we recognized, the problem wasn't just this one isolated incident happened. We didn't have a plan. And that was the issue that we really came to our attention.
Great lessons, James.
So lesson was learned, and we did deal with it, but it was at a higher cost of entry.
Yeah.
Bearing in mind, of course, we reached outside for outside help to get us through that initial hurdle. But moving forward, we spent a great deal of time building a digital communication plan that was in excess of the email and the website that we've been doing all those years.
Right.
And that's almost brick and mortar nowadays, whereas it's the social media space that appears to really be the sort of more cutting edge area for some businesses, especially business like an airport. There's no call to action. We're not selling anything directly.
Mm-hmm.
We're providing information to the public. That's a big difference.
Well, and the reality is, if people want immediacy, if my flight is delayed, and I'm not getting an answer from the person at the desk, I want somebody to hold my hand a little bit and tell me, you know, what's going on, right? And I don't know how many times I've been stuck in an airport frustrated. You know, no one's telling you what's happening. The flight might leave in 20 minutes. It might leave in 2 hours. You know, it's definitely, and there's sometimes there's legitimate reasons that happens, right? But to have a communications person whose job it is to help people to understand what's going on is pretty critical. And it's, I guess I find it really surprising that you had to get into the space reactively instead of proactively because, you know, we saw, oh man, we were talking a few years ago about, you know, I don't know if you remember the incident with Air Canada crushing the wheelchair of the young boy who was heading to Disney World to help fulfill a dream. And it lit up the Twitter sphere like insanely because Air Canada, their communications people were away for the weekend. So they weren't unable to get any response or anything else to, and because of Air Canada's inaction at that point, the kid, you know, basically lost his opportunity, you know, to go to Disney World and was probably terminally ill and you know, everything else. It was just awful. It was just a PR absolute nightmare, you know, the worst. I mean, what you had was lightweight compared.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely. and that's now changed. So that's great to see the progressive thinkers at the airport here.
And just if I could comment, you know, Paul, you make one point that I do want to clarify. One of the issues as well is helping us understand what information we do have versus what we don't have. So, for example, we're all about customer service. We want to help our passengers understand whether it's flight delays, et cetera, but we're not actually the keepers of that information. So what we're able to do is if there's an obvious impact to the airport, say there's a snow event or there's fog or a global issue that's preventing all operations occurring, but the nuance of why your flight is 20 minutes late, even the airport itself doesn't know that. So the key is for us is giving the passenger information that they can self-help, that we do control, telling them about global or larger issues. Let's say an aircraft emergency. You heard about the San Francisco situation. They were very put down heavily by the media because they didn't even tell people there was a plane accident there. People could see it out their window, and they weren't even saying anything. That's where we do step in as the airport. But for things like flight delays, et cetera, we have a website which provides that information. We do, of course, rely on the airlines to, of course, handle their passengers. I just point that out strictly because we wouldn't know if a 20-minute flight delay was occurring because of a mechanical or because they were late in Vancouver getting out, as an example. Yeah. We just don't have that information.
So a few years back, James, the Victoria Airport designed and implemented and built an amazing, beautiful glass-enclosed arrival wing. And it's, I mean, it's fantastic. It's worth the drive out to the airport just to see it. What sort of plans are in the works that you can tell us about for our beautiful airport?
We have extremely exciting plans. In fact, some are coming to completion this summer. A couple of the big initiatives that we have completed, we've got a brand new Spinnaker's on the Fly restaurant, which we proudly opened in January of this year. It is an actual airside restaurant. We've never had one in Victoria ever. So this is a real milestone for us. Yeah, we always had a kind of a cafe style, sort of stand up, pick something out of a cooler, type of situation, but nothing like a scratch made kitchen like we have today. The other big deal for us is we've invested in new circulation core. If you've ever traveled to the airport with someone who perhaps is mobility challenged, you'd have had an awful hard time even finding where the elevator was going upstairs. And now that half our flights generally are into a jet, which is in the upper hold area, we call it, you really do need that mobility. And what we've done is we put the elevator, both escalators, and our stair corridor in a very obvious location that allows a much more logical flow. The other two items, which I'm very pleased to share, we've greatly expanded our security area. Now, let me put a caveat. The physical space is far bigger, and we are lobbying the heck out of the government to give us more security people to come and screen people at the airport. Mm-hmm. If you travel out of our airport between 6 and 7 a.m., you will find it's extremely busy. Mm-hmm. And our airport is known to be convenient. We want it to stay that way. Mm-hmm. But because of all the flights leaving Victoria, wanting to head back east or down south, in the AM, it gets extremely congested. So we have allowed enough space to take our three security lines today, which is what we have. It can scale all the way up to 5 with the physical plant. But the airport itself does not control that. The last piece that I will say that we're very excited to have is when the completion of this project is done, we're going to have a high class free, no cost to the passenger, a business lounge upstairs in our upper hold room where we can encourage people to come and dwell. And again, it's not a pay lounge, just be an area to experience either some modern technology or just take a seat, have a coffee, and play on your laptop. We obviously have free Wi-Fi internet for our customers. But the main thing with our product offering was security, concessions, and circulation. And the one last thing I want to mention, the big deal that has not opened yet till the summer is a new duty-free retail store. As soon as you leave pre-board screening, you'll be presented. Most people don't even know we do duty-free in Victoria. Right. They think, Victoria, duty-free? We've always had duty-free. Yeah. We just haven't advertised it very well, and now it's literally called a duty-free shop. So that'll be very helpful.
That's fantastic.
Well, I think that we're going to have to broadcast John, Paul, and Mike from those new facilities when they're open.
Absolutely.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, thank you, James. This has been very entertaining, and I think allows our listeners to see how business can incorporate and adapt social media to their environment.
Yes.
And something that not a whole bunch of people know how to do. Fantastic. Yeah, thanks, thank you.
Sorry, final plug. Please do follow us at @fly_YYJ and like us on Facebook. All the links are on our website, www.victoriaairport.com. And thank you both for having me on.
Thanks. Excellent. All right. Take care.
Take care. So we're sitting down now with Constable Mike Russell of the Victoria Police Department, and I've peripherally known Mike, or Community Mike, as I like to call him, for a couple of years, but mostly on Twitter, John. We tweet back and forth and just, you know, say silly things to each other.
I've seen him on TV, likely in, well, obviously in his community role. Almost always in some sort of challenging role that he has to explain things that none of us understand or have challenged difficulty understanding. So thanks. You're doing an amazing job for our community. So thank you for coming and chatting with us today.
Absolutely. You know, thanks to both of you for inviting me out here, and for getting the opportunity to chat with you.
So, I guess the first question then, Mike is, how do you do it? You know, you're dealing, it's hard enough being a cop, but to be a cop and to have to report all of the bad news to people. And I guess, first of all, just sort of the general, like, how do you do it? Because I don't think I could do that job ever. But then we'll talk a little bit about more how you're using the different technologies here at Social Media Camp, but how you've implemented that as well in your communication strategy.
Sounds great. How do I do it? Well, I don't sleep and I drink lots of coffee. So that's the first tip. And I have an amazingly understanding wife. So I have to certainly give a shout out to her because she's the reason that Vic PD can be so successful in the social media, because I have so much leeway. You know, I'm responsible at Vic PD for all our public affairs content. So all our news releases, all our interviews, all our social media channels, content for the website and for our mobile Vic PD app as well. So it does keep me very busy, but I like to think that the love I have for my community and the passion I have for communications definitely shows through in the work that I do.
We've had numerous organizations that we've chatted with in the last several days, and certainly there's a difference in social media adoption from organizations and from business and from individuals. And organizations obviously have more challenging components to them. They're more public pieces, they're more client pieces. So particularly in your job, I guess, there are security pieces, et cetera. How do you folks manage that? And when did you really start to use social media? And is it really a one-way piece for you folks, or do you sense a two-way interaction?
Well, we've been active in social media since 2008, when my predecessor in the department, Sergeant Grant Hamilton, and his partner, Hervé Samard, they started our Twitter and Facebook accounts, and that's where it was. And that was a place for them to go and put our news releases on. So at that time, Vic PD's social media was a one-way thing. It was just a broadcast, basically. I took over the role in 2011, and we started expanding the portfolio of our social media to 10 different channels now that we have that I manage. And all of them are used for a very specific purpose, and that is to communicate. It's not to broadcast. It's to talk with my fellow community members, the community members who we as Vic PD are a part of and are very happy to serve. So that's basically where we're at right now, and we're always looking for that next push for what's going to be the next thing for communicating with the people we serve.
So one of the big questions I've been burning to ask you is if I was to go on to, say, a social network like, for example, Reddit, and ask, I don't know, for example, where at UVic I could purchase marijuana.
What kind of troublemaker are you? Can we talk about how nicely we're going to talk to this man, and you want to find out how to purchase dope? Well.
Do you think that the Victoria Police Department could help me out with that, Mike?
Funny you should ask.
Let's hope no is the answer.
That happened about 5 days after we started our Reddit account. Somebody had gotten on there and asked that exact question. So my response to them was a simple, as in, hey, we're here. So I'm sure they had a massive pucker factor. I haven't seen that account around since. But you know what? Being able to be humorous about it, being able to show that we don't take ourselves too seriously. We have a very serious job. You know, at the end of the day, we are in charge of making sure that with the citizens of Victoria and Esquimalt, we keep our cities and municipalities safe. Like, that's our job. But don't take yourselves too seriously. There are a lot of funny things that happen in our job. We are all human. And we need to tell those stories. We need people to understand that, because at the end of the day, you know, I'm a husband and a father. I'm a volunteer. And every one of the 243 men and women I serve with are that, as well as our well over 100 civilian staff members are that as well. We're members of the community, and we're there to do a job, but at the end of the day, we're just human.
That was a pretty interesting example, Paul. Likely there are many others. And can you, without putting you exactly on the spot, but giving you a few seconds to think through, are there any other instances in which this, sort of foray into social media for a police department did produce some interesting, unique, different responses that we might not, you know, on the surface think would be happening?
Well, there's two that really stick out in my mind, and one was actually fairly recently. It happened just late last week or early this week, and a fellow tweeted at VicPD Canada, "Hey, my girlfriend just kicked me out of bed because I stole her pillow. Can you come and get it back?" And to which my response was that I had heard from his girlfriend that he had stolen the coveted cold side of the pillow, and I was siding with her, so he was out of luck. So,
oh, that's fantastic.
We went back and forth with schoolyard rules for a little while and talking about the made-up laws that we were creating, and it was quite entertaining. And you know, a lot of people glommed onto that and thought it was funny. And again, it's showing that the people who we have these relationships with online can trust that we're going to have a nice, silly conversation about that, go about our days, and think nothing of it, right? So it's pretty funny. I guess the other one would be, do you remember when the Clipper was stolen?
Yeah.
Down in Seattle?
Yeah.
So in order to increase Canadian-American relations, I took it upon myself to present the Seattle PD with a gift, being a picture of a moose, through Reddit onto the Seattle Reddit subreddit, and saying thank you on behalf of all Canadians for securing our boat, and here's a gift for you in our thanks. And they liked it, to say the least.
Those are fantastic.
Oh, that's great. You know, and I guess the cool thing about the work that you're doing is, you know, it's interesting. You know, when I was growing up, I was told, you know, the policeman is your friend. And, you know, we had the storybooks with the nice policeman who helped you when you were lost and, you know, all that good stuff. And, but, you know, I get the sense generally in society, and maybe, John, you have a different perspective, but I kind of get the sense that there's been a lot of trust lost between citizens and police, and not particularly reflective of the Victoria Police Department, but, you know, different places and sort of just chatting with different people. And it's nice that to see that, you know, these are real people. They live in our community. They do, care about their community. They're trying to do what's obviously a very difficult job. And to see, you know, sort of a friendlier, face, especially, you know, on social media, it gives you a bit of a different opportunity to see them in a different light. And I wonder if you can sort of comment on how, that maybe if I'm reading that right, and if that's sort of part of the tactic, or what's at work there.
Well, you know, you touch on something really interesting there when you talk about sort of, you know, what we'd say from a survey would be an approval rating of the police department in a community. You know, if you polled the internal department and you said, okay, Vic PD, you know, your members, what do you think the public thinks of you? And this study has been done throughout North America. And they will say, you know, according to these studies, that though about 30% of the public like us. Well, we know from our own in-house community surveys, one of which we're going to have the results of coming up here in a couple months, that it's closer to 70 or 80% of the public really appreciate what we do. And I see that day to day on social media. You know, you'd think, oh my God, this guy manages social media for a police department. Like, is he going gray or bald? And like, how much crap does he have thrown at him every day? And it's remarkable because I would say it's 95% the other way where it's positive comments. And then when people are being a little bit of knobs around there, I don't have to do anything because the community that we've built up on social media, whether that's Facebook or Reddit or Twitter, they come to our defense.
Yeah. And actually, you know, that's an interesting point because it's one of the things in social media they talk about is building a community with advocates who are advocating for you. And, you know, like, for example, here at Social Media Camp, the odd time we'll get some negative comment. And what you see is the community that we've built comes and corrects those people.
Yes.
And so I hadn't thought about that in the context of the police department, but that makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Well, and certainly – likely in terms of, let's say, millions of different activities and events that happen to a police department in a given year, certainly one negative video will come out and then all of a sudden the office is branded that way. So unfair. In terms of what other police departments are doing locally, perhaps even nationally, where do you guys fit in terms of your social media, work is compared to other departments?
Well, there's, I really try to base the social media that VicPD does off of the needs of the community and taking feedback from people and just trying unique ways to use different social media networks. So like our Pinterest, for example, we were the first department, I think ever, to post stolen property on Pinterest. So we've recovered something. We put it on Pinterest on a board called Is This Yours? And recently, we actually had a community partnership now with Use Victoria, where everything we put on, we actually put on the Use Victoria found section, which gets 500,000 hits a month, and then link that back to our Pinterest. So we do...
That is so cool.
That is amazing.
It's been really successful, and it's actually really cool because we're seeing it go across Canada and through the states now as well. People calling and saying, how did you do this? And getting that. So
how interesting.
It's
good for
it's
you.
Neat. Well, it's really neat to see, you know, something you do. And for me, literally, it was on a whim. There was a bike in the hallway of my office. I said, how am I going to get this back to people? Maybe I should create a Pinterest board. Okay, I'll do that. And I created the Pinterest board and I put the bike on it and then I sent out a news release.
Yeah.
20 minutes from decision to do it to out in a news release.
And I guess people love the police a lot more when they help them find their stuff or, you know, deal with a domestic dispute or whatnot, as opposed to when they give
them
a traffic
innovative, ticket. Innovative, creative thinking. Good for you.
That's brilliant.
Yeah. So are you finding now other police boards doing that?
There are, I know Vancouver was doing it. Edmonton, I think, was the second adopter. I know the social media manager there, her name's Carol, and she's a fantastic woman, does a lot of really innovative stuff there. I kind of see social media and policing in two different ways. A lot of departments... I'd say like Toronto is a really good example of this. Locally, Saanich have a very wide breadth in a social media channel. So Saanich has about 13 or 14 officers on Twitter, right? In VicPD, we have two voices coming out from VicPD. There's myself as VicPD Canada and Chief Elsner, which is awesome that I have a chief that tweets, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Hope you're listening, Chief.
What's his hashtag? Do you know?
Chief Elsner.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's at Chief Elsner.
At Chief Elsner.
So we have two, and a lot of organizations do this wide breadth through different officers in different sections, whereas we do sort of a narrow breadth of our social media in each channel. So whereas I manage 10 channels, not 10 Twitter accounts, right? So we have, you know, Pinterest, Reddit, Flickr,
right.
YouTube,
right.
Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, mm-hmm. you know, all these different things. We do it deep. And each one of those social networks that I've chosen to join for the organization has its own purpose.
So I have, I guess, two final questions since we got the man here himself. The first one is, can I hold your gun?
It's like I'm giving a presentation to 7-year-olds again.
okay, fair enough.
And there's no video. You could be anyway.
And the final question, personal bugbear of mine, and John, you know, I'm very hypocritical in the sense that I've been very critical of the law, the marijuana laws in Canada. Even though I've never smoked the stuff and I hate the smell.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to get, and obviously you're not going to speak to, how the laws should be changed or anything like that. But, I'm curious to know sort of the approach Victoria Police Department has when it comes to, drug enforcement, especially around marijuana.
Sure. Well, I can touch on that in a couple ways. The first is, you know, a lot of advocates for marijuana legalization or decriminalization, which are two separate things. But they talk about, you know, an increase in charges locally or whether it be nationally, about simple possession of marijuana. Now, I can't say we don't as an infinite thing, but it's highly unlikely that the person smoking a joint on a corner is going to get arrested. You know, I've done it numerous times where I go up and I say, hey, you know what? It is still illegal. We live in Victoria. It's a BC. Technically, it's still illegal. Can you put that stuff away and get rid of it? Okay, great. And that's how it's done the majority of the time. What we see as an increase in the possession charges a lot of times is people that are, say we go and do a grow op and we bust a grow op that's happening. Well, because we put a charge in as production or possession for the purpose of trafficking, doesn't mean that's what Crown Council is going to go with, and they will set that charge as possession.
Mm-hmm.
So you might think that John got busted for having a joint, whereas they actually got busted for having 98 plants in a grow-up.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. So that's one way, one sort of difference there that I always like to clarify. And the other one is there's a lot of push even from the Canadian Association Chiefs of Police, and they did this last year as a resolution, to give officers the ability to ticket.
Right.
So right now it's either John smoking a joint on the side, you know, Douglas and Finlayson or whatever, down the road, I can either do nothing or arrest.
Right.
Well, really, are we going to arrest for the joint? No. But a ticket, just like you'd offer a bylaw ticket, was what the Canadian Association of Chiefs of Police passed as a resolution, and they're pushing for that to go through government. Mm-hmm. As far as legalizing or decriminalizing, that's going to be up to the Conservative government.
Somebody else's problem.
So, this ticket idea, could they pay with Cheetos, or would you be looking for... No, I'm just kidding.
Doritos.
My apologies. Hey, thanks so much, Mike, for being part of the show today. And we're really excited to have you at Social Media Camp. And as a friend on Twitter... It's been interesting following you and
very innovative use of social media. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Yeah.